One of the TV programs which I enjoy is Who Do You Think You Are? Where celebrities, faces that are known to us, try to find out a little bit more about their family history. And it's fascinating to watch as people find out more about their ancestors, who they were, where they came from, what made them famous, or on many occasions, what made them infamous. And very often people say that finding out something more about their family tree helps them understand a little bit more about who they are. And there's no doubt that this is part of the reason why so many folks spend time researching their family tree. It helps them to understand a little bit more of who they are. But it's a great question to ask. Who do you think you are? Now, you can ask it in a very cheeky way of, who do you think you are? But you can also ask it in a probing way that just simply asks, who do you think you are? Let me illustrate the problem for you. Some years ago, when our daughters were small, I left them to school one morning, and while I was doing that, I was their dad. While in the school, I met the principal and chatted with him for a moment, and while I did, I was a school governor. I went from there to visit in the hospital, and to those whom I visited, I was their minister. I met a friend of my wife's and suddenly became Heather's husband. I bumped into an old friend of my dad's, and he knew me as Sam's son. Now, many of you will know it's not hard to confuse me, but that morning I was confused. So many different identities in such a short time, and it's the same for all of us. In different situations and with different people, we are known in different ways. It is easy to become confused about who you are. Many people are defined by what they achieve or by what they acquire. And so to describe them, we use lots of adjectives. We say they are brilliant, they're gorgeous, they're talented, they're absolutely fabulous, they're wealthy, they're famous, they're well-dressed, they're cool. Or they could be defined by what they do. She's a student, a homemaker, a teacher, a nurse, a secretary. And all of these things are good in themselves, but they are not good by themselves. For what happens when you change and the adjectives no longer accurately describe who you are? What happens when you're not just as brilliant or gorgeous as you used to be? What happens when your health and your wealth start to slip? Or when people no longer recognize who you are? Do you stop being who you are? Do you change and become someone else? And if you are defined by what you do, what happens when you no longer do? When retirement comes along? Or when redundancy strikes? As the old joke goes, what do you call Postman Pat when he retires? Just Pat. And if you answer the question, who do you think you are, by describing what you have achieved or acquired or by what you do, you're in trouble. For all these things are transient. They don't last forever. They all fade away. The American pastor and author John Ortberg speaks of the lessons he learned while playing Monopoly with his granny. And if you really want to find out about someone, find out who they are, get out the Monopoly board and play with them, and you discover truths about them. Ortberg would win the game. He would amass a fortune. He would own swathes of property right across the board. But when the game was over, his granny would look him in the eye and say, John, you can't keep it. It all goes back in the box. No matter how much he achieved, how much he acquired, no matter what he did, it all went back in the box. How slow we are to learn such a simple and yet obvious lesson. If you define yourself by what you achieve, by what you acquire, or what you do, you're in trouble. For at the end of the day, it all goes back in the box. We really do need to find a definition of ourselves which is unchanging. And then we can start to answer the question, who do you think you are? In the first chapter of the Bible, we read that God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created them, male and female, he created them. So we were created with an identity. We were created in the very image of God, created to be in fellowship with him. What an amazing identity we had. The third chapter of the Bible describes how we lost that identity. This was the original identity theft, what we call the fall. Sin entered into the perfection of God's creation, and we were separated from God by our own sinfulness. Now, essentially, the rest of the Bible is concerned with the restoration of that broken relationship, of that identity being renewed. But how could that happen? How can that identity be restored, that relationship brought back again? Well, there are plenty of examples, both in the Bible and in life, of people who have tried to work their way back into God's favor. They have worked hard at whatever they have done. They've been the kindest, nicest people you could ever meet. They're great church attenders. They tick all the right boxes. Everything they do is good. And then there are those who take the opposite approach, who define themselves not by what they do, but by what they don't do. And in this part of the world, we call them good living. There's a little ditty that says, I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't chew, or go with girls that do. We define ourselves by what we don't do. And if our identity is all about what we don't do, then our Labrador is doing pretty well in those stakes because she doesn't drink, smoke, or chew, as far as I know. Such folks, by what they do or don't do, try to create an identity which will attract God's attention to them, which will earn God's favor. And again, many of these things are good in themselves, but they are not good enough. The hymn writer, Cecil Frances Alexander, puts it so well when she writes, "There was no other good enough to pay the price of sin. He only could unlock the gate of heaven and let us in." That broken relationship, that lost identity, is not restored by us, by our efforts, what we do or don't do, what we gather up. It is restored by God's grace, his undeserved love. And at the cross, we see God restoring our identity. The Apostle Paul puts it like this, "Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. The old is gone, and the new has come." Here is your unchanging, eternal definition. Here is your identity. In Christ, you are a new creation. Jesus said, "Whoever wants to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for me will find it." You can try to save your life by achieving, acquiring, and doing, and in the process, lose your life. Or you can give your life to Jesus Christ and find life and find out who you really are. At one stage of his life, John Newton had been the captain of a slave ship. But God, in his amazing grace, had touched and transformed his life. In the hymn, "Glorious Things of Thee Are Spoken," Newton wrote, "Fading are the worldling's pleasures, all their boasted pomp and show, solid joys and lasting treasures. none but Zion's children know. Newton found his lasting, unfading identity not in the barbarity of the slave trade, nor in the boasted pomp and show of the wealth and power that he could gather up, but in the solid joys and lasting treasures of being in Christ. He found his true identity. The prophet Hosea had a fairly stormy family life, which God used many times as an illustration both of Israel's broken relationship with him and his desire to restore that relationship. Hosea's children were given strange names. His daughter was given a name which meant "not my loved one," and his son a name meaning "not my people." Now that's some identity to carry around with you. Not my loved one, not my people. But God in his grace showed what was on his heart and turned that around. He gave them new names, new identities, showing love to the one called "not my loved one." And to those called "not my people," he said, "You are my people." Now there is a lasting identity that won't either fade or stop. Loved by God, known by his people. And that is the same identity which God gives to us through faith in Jesus Christ. At the beginning of John's gospel, we read, "To all who received him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision, or a husband's will, but born of God." What a wonderful identity, a child of God, when you receive Jesus, when you believe in his name. John picks up this theme later on when he writes, "How great is the love that the Father has lavished on us, that we should be called children of God." And then to emphasize the point, in case we don't appreciate it, John adds, "And that is what we are." Once you become a child of God through faith in Jesus Christ, you don't lose that identity. No matter what else happens around you, that stays unchanged. It cannot fade. I heard of someone recently who was asked the question, "Who do you think you are?" And she replied, "I'm a Christian. I'm a child of God, thinly disguised as an accountant." What about you? Are you a child of God who is currently working out what that means for you as a student, a homemaker, teacher, nurse, farmer, secretary? Who do you think that you are? May God grant you the grace to find your true identity in Jesus Christ. We join together to sing a wonderful hymn of praise to this our God, Lord of all being, throned afar.